Now you're back for a brief check-in.
Now, I think a really important function of the scan is to shift attention to the process of sensing. Because always when we act in the world, there clearly is, we sense things. We just don't put them in the foreground. Right? I mean, it would be very scary if you picked up a cup that you know is hot tea and you didn't sense that it was hot. Right? Or you didn't sense the weight of it. Right? It would be, you would think something was very, very wrong. And there you wouldn't think it was wrong with the world. You would know it was wrong with you. In fact, if you didn't sense, you wouldn't know how firm a grip to give, and you probably couldn't even hold it, right? That's the loop between the sensory and the motor. But still, when we act every day, there's only a sufficient or sometimes slightly less than sufficient amount of sensing. So the scan begins to change that proportion, right? Where out of action and into sensing, first sensing just completely in stillness, you know, and then introducing some action. And would you therefore please lie on your right side and support your head for the moment with objects. And again, with attention not just to the action, but to the sensations, which, so what, you know, why sense? Well, it's only in sensing when we act that we can discover what we're doing and what we're not yet doing or what we are not doing at all. Right? So without sensing, you can't really make any changes. So you can't change a path of movement if you don't know where you're going. So with sensing, lengthen the femurs downward. Just note how even from that very beginning, there's a direct relationship of movement between the heels and the bottom of the pelvis. It's very easy when giving attention to the pelvis to go upward where the large muscles, right? You've got the extensors and in the lower back, very easy for pelvis to mean the upper part of the pelvis. So it takes conscious directing of one's attention and listening in order for it to gain as much presence in our sensing and therefore in our action as does the upper part. So note how the minute that the heels start moving, right, the minute that the knees start moving, the heels start moving, the sitting bones, the bottoms of them, the backs of them, the coccyx, bottom of the sacrum, and the whole tilt of the sacrum, right? The top of the sacrum at some point goes forward, and the bottom of it and the coccyx tilt backward. Good. And then stay with the knees so arranged. And with the right arm long, you can put the left hand on the floor below the right arm now. And or maybe, I don't know, just slide the right arm a little bit down and up just to alert your brain that, oh yeah, we're back into this. Same, the story is continuing. So just a little bit downward, a little bit upward. And then take your arm to the highest place where it can go comfortably, easily, yeah. And good. Put the left hand for support if you'd like, and then begin to imagine that you're actually going to stand on the left knee. So again, you can imagine a floor that is now below you, right below the knee, and that you would actually stand on the left knee. So something probably lying on the side, that evokes a slight kind of lengthening. And just notice when you think that way, when you think that you would stand on the left knee, whether this somehow moves through the... You see, this will really only work if the knees are already fairly far away from the chest. So keep checking. Keep checking either visually or in your sensing. Yeah, then as you stand on the left knee, perhaps you find that that kind of travels a bit through the... Something happens through the pelvis, through the trunk, that actually makes it that you can slide the right arm a little bit higher, maybe. So it's a funny thing. It's like stand in your imagination, right? Stand in your imagination. So it's not really that you're pushing. It's that you're imagining to the degree that somehow something happens, right? So you, when you stand on the knee, clearly you're not going to be bent at the hip joint so much. And then every time you not stand on the left knee, every time you not stand on the left knee, bring the right arm a little bit down. A little bit down. And then as you stand in the imagination on the left knee, bring the arm upwards. So during the time that you're bringing the arm upward, you can support yourself on the left hand in any way that is... And when you stand on the knee, really think about, listen to the front of the hip joints. So every time you imagine standing on the left knee, you find whether that can somehow fit into a chain of events that lets you lengthen, bring the right arm even higher. Even higher. And then continue with the arm, but now imagine that you're standing on the right knee instead of the left one. The right knee instead of the left one. You're in that zone between where the image actually makes a very slight movement. And turn the palm of your hand so that it's on the floor now. Turn the palm of the hand so it's on the floor. And there may come a moment where, of course, as the whole spine adapts, the belly comes forward, the breastbone comes forward, the head may first go a little bit backward, right, backward towards the top of the shoulders, the chin will move away from the spine, but then at a certain point you might find that the hand, the arm, begins to go... You can lift the head a bit, and the arm could go higher if the head lifted, and it can go underneath the head. But when the head lifts, do you have to bring it forward, or can it stay where it is? Maybe if you do have to bring it forward just the smallest amount. Right? Because the head somehow being back has something to do with kneeling through the right knee, through what happens at the bottom of the pelvis, through the whole, not only slight arching in the back, but a kind of maybe push upward that you feel. And then have it be really more and more the thought of standing rather than some big action of doing. Right? It's a thought of standing on the knee. Good. Yeah. And then your head can lift, and in fact it can also turn as if you wanted to follow the hand with your eyes in case it's going to go so far away that you don't know if you'll ever see it again. So like, oh, where's my hand? Where's my head? Where's my head? And in the way that the ATM goes, it's really has to do with opening the side, so it's not so much a rolling forward. Not a big rolling forward. Okay, good. Leave it. Lie on your back. So these areas of tissue between the ribs, and then the muscles and connective tissues that are overlying the ribs. Do better when we give time for the change to happen, the inhibitory messages to reach, to eliminate contractions that may have been there for a hell of a long time. So roll to your left side. And even, you know, when we know what happens, is it, what's the purpose of giving full attention even when we know what's going to happen? Like, how many times can you watch the same movie and still be interested in it? So, but there's something here that we're not watching a movie which doesn't change, right? We're watching a system that changes in response to our attention, right? Changes in response to our listening on two levels. One is you can consciously notice that you're holding still somewhere below the shoulder blades, or just one inch above the breast and the breastbone, or right, oh God, in the tongue. Right? So there are the things that by giving attention we can consciously notice and maybe consciously inhibit. Oh, whew, there's my tongue, now it's resting. And there are also the other levels that are not conscious, where our conscious noticing highlights for the not conscious noticing the places to change things. And those are the changes that happen that surprise us, like, whoa, this happened. There's the, I let my tongue go, but then, wow, this happened. Somebody said to me during break, she laid on her back and her whole sacrum felt like it dropped in relation, backward in relation to the two ilia. That's not something she did. But it is a consequence of attention and action and listening. Good. And stay like that with the knees. So slide, begin to slide the left arm, a little up, a little bit down, just to remind the system of this is what we're after here. And then begin to imagine, right? It's, he stresses a lot that it's kneeling on the right knee first in the imagination. So if it's in the imagination, and if you imagine it in a very convincing way, maybe the reorganization in the hip joint, in the relation of the pelvis to the legs, will be finer than if you just push the knee long in action. So in imagination. And you can use the right hand on the floor. You can turn the left palm to the floor after a while. So you imagine through the knee. You imagine through the feeling in the groin. Maybe this four-sided perspective of the femur could be helpful here as well, that we had a couple of days ago. So the distance from on the outside of the leg from the knee to the hip joint, on the back of the leg, from the knee to the hip joint rather than the attachment of the hamstrings at the sitting bone. From the knee to the hip joint in the front, and from the knee to the hip joint from the inside, that some of you found so powerful, a potent entry from the knee joint through that 10 centimeters higher than the adductors. So, and then continue with the arm, the lengthening, the reaching, and imagine kneeling on the left knee, and every once in a while check whether the knees have migrated forward, whether you're without realizing the knees have come forward, because it's easier for the hip joints to be a little bit flexed. So we have to approach it through the image, imagining of kneeling on the left knee, and through the actual looking, where are the knees. And again, you may at some point find that the arm carries, there's something about the shoulder girdle, the upper ribs, carry the head backward, but then beyond that, the arm maybe can go even behind the head, the shoulder blade goes behind, and then the head lifts, and you can turn a little bit and to look a little bit upward, a little bit behind as the arm goes behind you. And you can use the right arm, the right hand on the floor if you'd like. And then lie on your back again. And lie your right side again. Let the carry the two knees, the two femurs, so that the knees are downward. Lie on the right side. Mm-hmm. And stay like that. Stay like that. And just flex the two feet. Flex the two feet without. See, when you flex the feet and then unflex them. So do it. Do it, again, softly enough, because, again, it's so easy to just carry out the instruction locally and go like, you know, you should always be suspicious. So if the instruction says flex your feet, the first thought should be, oh, yeah, and what's going to happen in the rest of me? What trick is this? What nasty trick is this? So notice whether when you flex your feet, whether immediately you've already have your knees bent. Do the hip joints want to flex? There's the nasty trick. Or there's the nasty learning situation. There's the wonderful learning situation. So can you find a way to flex the feet and not flex the hip joints? We know it's possible because I've seen all of you kneeling and putting the toes under for running. So now how do you flex the feet? Do you flex the feet by just bringing the toes forward? That wouldn't work, would it? When you were really kneeling. If you're really kneeling, you have the floor underneath you, which means you have to carry your heels a bit more towards where? Buttocks, right? So the heels, so you flex the feet, that means the ankles bend. That means the ankles bend, no, that's opening the ankle. So the ankles bending means that the feet come towards your knees, the toes come towards your knees, there you go. So can you flex your feet as if you had a floor below your knees and you didn't want to jam your toes? So that means you need to somehow move your heels somewhere there towards your back, and maybe in fact that helps to open the hip joints rather than automatically close them. Can you do it faster? And if you do it faster, can it become something that actually brings the lower belly forward, brings the sitting bones backward, and maybe even gives you a bit of a push upward? So, but it's a kind of a thing where you're bringing the heels a little bit back towards the buttocks. The heels go back towards the buttocks, and that's why the feet flex. Yeah, there you go. That's different than just flapping the feet like two little fans. Mm-hmm. Okay, rest on your side. Rest on your side. Isn't that amazing? Things we do in one orientation, like you kneel, you put the toes under, you don't even... No big deal. Now you do it like this without the floor. The orientation disappears. Okay, now again, so the knees are in continuation, or the thighs are in continuation of the trunk. And now just the left foot. Is it possible to flex the left ankle in that way of really thinking also where the heel goes, while at the same time imagining that you stand on the left knee? You can put your left hand anywhere you want for support. So you imagine that you're standing on the left knee as you flex the left foot and put the toes for running without mashing them into the floor. So you're doing one thing and then you're imagining this lengthening downward. Great, good. Let that be for a moment. And lean with your left hand on the floor. And as you sweep and slide your right arm upward and higher, you do the flexing of the foot, flexing of the ankle, that is, the imagining that you're kneeling on the knee as you bring the right arm upward. And notice the moment when, there's a way that as before, the two shoulders, or the right shoulder, kind of chest, carry the head backward. They carry the chin upward. And then the arm continues to go behind, and you actually look at the hand while you continue to flex the left ankle and continue to imagine that you're standing on the left knee. And probably if you want your arm to go any further back, you will absolutely need to turn it over on the palm, and you definitely need to lift your head. Definitely need to lift your head. And if you want the arm to slide farther, you'll have to kick those pillows out. Because that's it. There you go. So again, you stand on the left knee in the imagination, you flex the left foot. In reality, you follow with your eyes, and then you change which knee you stand on, which foot you flex. You continue through the arm, the head, the chest, but you flex now the right foot, and lengthen as if you stand on the right knee. So you imagine it, but you see, if you roll onto the belly, you'll get part of something, but I think you'll miss part of something. So I would suggest really stay on the side. You'll roll a little bit forward. There's a moment in which if the arm goes, have a rest.
Do we repeat the flexing,
or just... Doesn't really, it's not clear. So either repeat it every time you lengthen up. Yeah, that's what I would do probably. I would repeat it every time I bring the arm up, and then let it go when I bring the arm back down. I think so. Yes, that's what it seems like. Stand in your imagination. Stand on the knee and on the bent foot. And with every movement, pass the arm over to wherever it will go and return. So maybe what he is suggesting that you imagine is that you're standing on the knee and on the toes. Right? It's as if you really had a floor underneath you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So roll to your right side again. And we just pick up where we left off. So you continue to, in your imagination, stand on the right leg. That means on the right knee and on the toes of the right foot. And like this, you move the arm until it will pass over to the other side, over to the other side, behind yourself, behind yourself, behind yourself, and if you don't lift your head too high, but you turn it, you may find that actually your head is lying either on the forehead or even on the left ear. That's right, on the left cheek, or on the left cheek, or on the left cheek. And maybe the whole chest is not on the floor, right? You're not on the belly. The whole chest is not on the floor, but certainly the right side of the chest is. The right side of the chest is. So get particularly interested in the moments where your hand seems to get stuck, right? Something isn't long or wide enough. So maybe if you lengthen downward through both. Now think of kneeling on both knees and flexing both feet with every passing. So maybe it's supporting this whole action from really below. That's it. And then you may find that once you pass through a particular, it's this sort of like upper right hand part of the circle, you can continue, then the palm will turn to the ceiling again, and then you'll arrive with your hand by your buttocks. There's a particular, and then return. Don't go forward. Return. Return the same path. And yes, it's about the ribs. Yes, it's about the chest. Yes, it's about the head. And yes, it is so totally about imagining kneeling on the two knees and standing on the two toes, the support and the maybe not just extension, but some sort of upward push that you might get for what can happen all the way inside the chest, between the shoulder blades, so that that quarter of a circle that is the most complex, maybe if you lengthen your arm there, maybe that also makes a difference. Use your other hand for support at any time. You. Great. And lie on your back and rest. And do lie on your left side. And a few times, just without doing anything with the arm, just with the legs in this kneeling orientation, flex the ankles in the way that you would if you were having to tuck your toes under for running. It wouldn't be enough to just flap your feet. You actually have to move. You have to bring the heels closer to the buttocks, right, or closer upward in the direction of the upper edge of your mat, so that you could tuck the toes under, and at the same time, think of kneeling on the two knees. So it's not just about the ankles, the feet, and the heels, but it's the whole thing. If you were really kneeling, then the knees would be touching the floor. They wouldn't pull away from the floor. The hip joints wouldn't flex. And then continue to do that only with your right foot every time that you begin to slide your left arm upward. So you continue to bring together, right? Bring together these actions which could be done separately, right? You can do something with kneeling separately from flexing the foot. So we're bringing that in and seeing if that sets up the pelvis and the spine in such a way that the arm can go longer, travel upward. And especially, you know, in the moments where you feel like something's too clumpy, something's too short, something is too unclear to be able to slide your arm, some relationship between the arm, the left arm, the shoulder blade, and the ribs. See if you can get help. You can support yourself on the right hand on the floor. You can get help from this imagined kneeling and real flexing, and then the other, or maybe both. You can do both and then switch to the left one. See which is most helpful for you. One knee kneeling and one foot flexing, or two knees kneeling. And there will be a moment in which, as the arm goes behind, check whether the arm is going behind or you're rolling forward, and therefore you roll forward of the arm. And there's something, they pass each other, right? There's a bit of rolling forward, but don't let that mask, don't let that rolling forward take over, so that there's more rolling forward than there is of an opening and lengthening and the arm going back. Until the head can lie on the, maybe first on the nose, maybe eventually on the right cheek or the right cheekbone, that it actually can put it down. It's lifted, put it down. And if you maintain a constant attention to the lengthening through one or both knees and to the flexion of one or both ankles, can you do that? Can you do that and still lengthen the arm, as if really the lengthening of the arm comes from the hip joints, from the lower belly, from the pubis, from the knees, from the ankles, not from the shoulder girdle. That's it. And you can maybe during the path lengthen one knee or the other a little bit more in the imagination, or even really to stand on it to provide some kind of slight upwardness, some kind of lengthening through parts that still want to shorten, until perhaps your arm can go all the way behind and just it'll turn over again and then touch the back of your pelvis. It's easy again, right? Good. Lie the back and rest.
Roll, please, to your right side.
And left hand is on the floor in front. Arrange the knees, of course. For kneel, please, kneel. And as you bring the arm upward, you stand on the right knee. Stand on the right knee and flex the right foot. Flex the right foot as if you really are standing on the toes of that foot. Right? And you do that as you bring the arm around. Follow, right? Follow, follow the hand. Look at it. Let the head turn, let it roll as much to rest on the left side as is possible. Continue with the arm downward until it touches, well, maybe not until it touches, until you can bend the elbow in such a way that you could begin to bring the hand now from behind to the front. And continue then forward, skip underneath your standing hand, and do this a number of times. And the suggestion is that it's the kneeling on the right knee, on the underneath knee, that gives the length, that gives the support, and on the right toes, as if those are really on the ground. And then come. So you come underneath, when your arm is behind, you've got to bend the elbow so that your hand, you have to bend the elbow, so you took a straight arm a little bit too far. So back up a little bit, because you bend the elbow so your hand can aim to the waist. Yeah, to the waist, to the lower ribs, and then you glide the hand and the whole arm, not underneath the pelvis, but underneath the waist and the ribs. And then, of course, your trunk is going to have to adapt. So your head is going to have to roll onto the right side again. You can support yourself a little bit on the left hand again, and then you bring the arm forward. You bring the arm forward, that's it. And then you slither to the ground and continue with the arm in that full circle, right? Until you can also reverse that circle. Reverse the circle. And let the head, I don't know, let the head, find what you want to do for the head when it lifts, when it is on the floor. So it's not just always lifted. So when your arm is going underneath you, whether from behind or from the front, lift the least number of parts that you require to. And which knee do you stand on when? Or have the legs become a sort of irrelevant mermaid tail? So there's a certain, it's that upper right hand part of the circle that's the hardest. Upper right hand. Behind your head, right? The part of the circle that's behind your head. That's the right there. So which knee could you stand on so you get a bit more? There you go. That's it. That's there. You did it that time. Excellent. Did not have to bend the elbow. Brava. Good. So it's as if, you know, the arm circles and there's this constant attention and intention of the legs as supportive in a different context, as if you were kneeling. And then the whole trunk is kind of a waterfall, a cascade of bones that adapts to the standing below and the movement above. Rest on your back. Thank you.
And lie on your left side, of course. And first stand on the in the imagination, excuse me, if you kneel on the left knee and on the left toes, right? The toes are like for, as you, if you literally were kneeling, toes are tucked under for stand on the toes. And, but when, right, when in this whole event of bringing your left arm upward underneath your head, and in particular, at the moment where the arm passes under the head and behind, right when it starts going behind is when most people will do less with taking the arm back and more with bringing the head forward. So that would be the moment to really kneel on the left knee, really stand on those left toes in your imagination. But kneel on the left knee, which really means a something in the hip joint. Right? Something in the hip joint. Because, see, a lot of the time when we effort, what we do is we actually can throw in the flexors. So if you throw in the flexors in the groin rather than open the groins, that will actually make it much harder for the left side of the chest, for the left armpits to open. And you, anywhere where there's a difficulty with the arm moving, kneel on the one knee and flex that foot, or on both, or on the other. So you have to find at what moment is one knee more helpful than the other, or is it kind of you find that it's putting both into the action. And then the arm can go all the way around behind you, and pretty soon after it passes shoulder height, you need to bend the elbow and think of the hand going underneath, diving underneath the ribs. And, diving underneath the ribs. So in the moment when the left arm has trouble in the part behind your head, something about looking at that hand, it's ooh, what could that have to do with the spine between your shoulder blades? So the spine between the shoulder blades needs to do what in that moment? Well, it needs to turn. It'd be helpful if that spine could turn, so you wouldn't have to just only roll the ribs, but you could roll the ribs and turn the spine between the shoulder blades. That means the breastbone would turn. And at the same time, looking up has something to do maybe with the breastbone right in front of between the shoulder blades, going forward and up, taking the spine between the shoulder blades into a bit more extension. So the back of the head goes back, the spine between the shoulder blades goes into a bit more extension, and ooh la la, the arm gets another few degrees of independence. Another few degrees of independence. So where, how much you lift, where you look, how much you turn, where you take the back of the head and make une belle différence. Yeah. Details within details, and details of the details, it can be so delicious what they can bring you, right? So that this distal movement brings you more and more proximal reorganization. That's where it counts. More proximal reorganization. Great. You haven't changed direction. It's too late now because you have to rest.
Now here would be something curious. Let's loop back to tomorrow. I mean, to yesterday. That would be really tricky, wouldn't it? Let's loop back to tomorrow. I don't even read science fiction. Okay, so bring one arm up and keep one arm down. Let them both rest on the back of the hand. Back of the hand. And remember what we did yesterday is we lengthened each arm. So the one upward goes upward, the one downward, downward. How's that today? And we did not let the head roll, right? Kept the head from rolling so that you could really give an opportunity for parts below the head, to show themselves in their greater glory than they usually have. You know, I like to think of the ring of the first rib as a kind of a beer coaster, a coaster from a German beer garden that tilts because it gives me a plane to watch. So how does that plane tilt from the left rib to the right rib? And do you find now that in order for your head to be still, one side of it actually lengthens? Because one rib moves away from behind the ear, and the other rib on the left moves up. So if you keep the head there, the neck changes length because C7 and all the vertebrae below move. There's your clue for standing as we did on the first day with legs crossed, shifting weight while keeping the head. Good. Change the arms. The other one went up, the other one down. So now maybe literally you can imagine that as the right shoulder or left shoulder goes down, I'm going to talk about the right shoulder going down, and the right shoulder goes down, that it actually moves away from the whole base of the skull on the right side, behind the ear, to the back. And that's why the side gets longer. Yeah, your right arm is going down as well, so that's good. So when the right arm goes down, the tip of the shoulder moves away from the base of your skull, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all the neck, right, the tissues of the neck, the muscles of the neck, attach into the shoulder blade, they attach into the ribs on the right side. So if the shoulder blade and the ribs on the right side go down, but the skull stays where it is, those tissues have to elongate, don't they? Yeah. So the right side of the neck gets long. And then if you change, you already have changed. Good. All right. And now, another funny little thing here. Bring your arms across your chest long. So the left one goes long over the right shoulder, and the right one goes long. So you keep them as long as you possibly can. And lengthen once the left arm to the right and the right arm to the left. That's it. And then can you lengthen both of them, each one to its wrong side, the left arm to the right and the right arm to the left together? Okay. And then keep them like that. Keep them just not lengthening, but just sort of crossed, but long, so the the elbows are straight, even though the hands are probably be a bit more in the air. And now look with your closed eyes. Look at the fingertips or the nails of the left hand, and then quickly to the nails of the right hand or to the pads of the fingers. Very quickly, just with the eyes. So don't roll your head. Just with the eyes. Just flick with the eyes. So if your head rolls a little bit, but see out of the corners of your eyes. Just quick. Left, right, left, right. Good. Then change which arm is closer to your chin. Do the same, and then with the eyes closed, actually, you quickly look from fingertips to fingertips. Right, left, right, left, right, left. Good. And then leave that, and one more time, roll to either the left or the right side first. And without any supportive chatter, or for my part, use everything, you know, all the components of the knees, the kneeling, the toes tucked under, to bring your arm around once or twice, all the way around. And one direction and then the other. Using the legs in this way that we've developed. Just once or twice in one direction, once or twice in the other, and then roll to the other side. You know, there are some creatures, I've never had this image before, so trying it out on you. There are creatures who always, I believe, use their whole selves. And I would imagine those are the slithering ones, the ones without legs, right? Like everybody now looks like such a proficient slitherer. It's amazing. There's no, it's not an arm, it's a self. It's a self. So it's a highly intelligent, from heel to fingertips, slitherer. Okay. Anything you would like to do while still lying on the floor, including just lying there? And if you follow the movement that takes place, whether you're moving or not, which is, of course, breathing, and if you mostly keep your attention in the lower belly as the starting, potentially starting place of an inhalation or an exhalation, that then amplifies and spreads through the non-rib parts of the trunk, and then through the rib parts of the trunk. The small floating ribs, the ribs below the shoulder blade, the widest part of the chest, of the breasts. The narrow part in the, behind the pecs and to the base of the neck. And is it, how is it now to check the forward and back volume or dimension of the chest? You find the place that seems to be the greatest distance from back of breastbone to front of spine or to the floor.
floor, however you measure it for yourself. Or if not one particular area, just a capacity to imagine, if not sense, the distance. As distance rather than as, right, that contrast that can happen between what we know about ourselves, for sure there has to be distance or you'd be in a hospital. And yet, how is it experienced? Is it? Good. So unlike other slitherers who would continue to live on the floor, we have the advantage of finding out what this does to the uprightness of our support. So please do eventually, in the not too distant future. If you could pause, you know, on the knees, because we have been on the knees, and just see how it is without even doing anything on the knees. How is it to kneel? I was real kneeling after imagined kneeling. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, whoa, where'd that pelvis go? Become like pushed forward, driven forward. Yeah, and there behind there, one of our colleagues has been playing with that initial movement that we did on the first day of bringing the leg out to the side. It's really quite, looks quite different. It's different, yeah. And when you stand, I would suggest that you stand on the floor. I think it's easier for the adjustments that now, the recalculations that I imagine are happening inside the brain of like, okay, given all of this, how do I compose the standing? And this is where you realize that we are those who perceive what has reorganized and what continues to be implemented somehow or integrated during this next action, which is just standing. So I never think of the coming up to stand. It's like, so let's figure out what happened on the floor. It's like, let's figure out how what happened on the floor is now accepted, not accepted, adapted to standing.
More volume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine that perhaps looking up could be an interesting experience. Looking up and around, because you know, sometimes after ATMs, we act as if we live in straight lines. We look around the horizon, right? And then we look up and down, but we actually live in, mercifully, a much more interesting world. Or for some people, it's a much more dangerous world that requires looking around. But it is fascinating to actually literally really look around, you know, after an ATM like this and see how the support is organized
while the movement is allowed. Right? And how much, perhaps, of looking in around certain parts, especially that part that was difficult on the floor, which was behind the head, right? Behind the head on the one side, behind the head on the other side, that part of why it's we very often can't see there and we don't lift the chest is because the chest is busy clumped to the pelvis trying to keep balance. Right? So it's the chest can't be allowed to follow the head because its first role is to make sure we don't fall down. Right? So then you ask people to lift the chest, but they don't really have the balance for it. Right? Which is why, of course, it can usually work with people to look around themselves and behind first when they're sitting. Because there, the balance issues are much lesser.
There's kind of more of a down.
Right. That's right, exactly. There's a reaching down that's not a pushing, which is a little bit like when we work with the artificial floor, right? It's a response. It's a neuro, like a support
down
response.
To go
yeah.
Up. Yeah.
Down to go up. It's a support response.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Which means it could be very interesting before lunch. Let's first of all walk around. And we'll remove the mat so you can do so a bit better in this room. And then, if you recall, at least one of your partners from the morning. But make sure you walked enough for yourself. So if you're approached and you're not ready, send them off.